Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Well, hello, I'm Janet Morena, Executive Director of Priests for Life. Welcome to Just Ask Janet. Well, you know, dear to my heart are the groups out there who really do what we call the street activism. They take that pro-life message out to the streets, to the highways and the byways, because you know what? You can't keep abortion on the back burner. You got to make people aware of the damage abortion is doing to those babies. Thousands and thousands of babies are still dying in our country every single day. And then did your mind ever think about what happens to those babies? Where are they? Many of them are discarded as garbage. But today we're going to be talking about some of them were allowed to have a proper burial. And joining me today on this program is a very, very good friend of mine and Father Pavone's, Eric Scheidler, of course. He is the son of the famous Joe Scheidler. And Joe Scheidler, I can tell you, influenced myself and Father Pavone in getting active in the pro-life movement. It was Joe Scheidler who originally, when Father Pavone first started doing Priests for Life full-time, it was Joe Scheidler that brought Father Frank out to Chicago and took him under his wing. So joining me today, who is now, of course, running the Pro-Life Action League, is his son, Eric Scheidler. Eric, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Janet.
Well, of course, you know, I cannot start a program talking to you without talking about your dad, the godfather of the pro-life movement. I mean, a man who I held in such great esteem, who influenced, I still can remember the very first time I held 99 ways to stop abortion by your dad. I mean, when I finally met him that first time and Tim Murphy put that book in my hand, I was like so excited that he could autograph this book for me. But, you know, I hung on him as an early pro-lifer, your dad, every word, his training. And of course, you cut your teeth on the abortion issue as a kid with your dad, right? So just tell us a little bit about that. Oh, no. What happened? How did we go from audio to no audio? Ay, ay, ay.
Didn't do anything.
I know. So we, Eric, we have no audio. We can't hear you.
Can he hear you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, he doesn't.
He hears me. I don't hear him.
Nothing's changed. I haven't changed a thing.
You know, this is the forces of evil. This is terrible. Somebody doesn't want me to talk about those aborted babies being buried. I'm going crazy. This is terrible. We just heard them crystal clear.
His audio was dead. You can see it here.
Yeah, Mr. Scheidler, your audio is off. It's completely off.
Should he leave and come back in? Try it again?
Yeah. We can't leave because this link one.
Happened. See where the events are?
Yeah. Is this back? Are we working?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay, I can't figure out what happened there.
Eric, I'm telling you, it's scary. It's like the reason why I'm trying to get this tape today is I want to air it near the end of next week,
yeah,
so I get
yeah.
people to go see out. Where the events are and show up. You know,
all right, you want to take it from the top, like, or?
Yeah, we're gonna take it from the top.
Okay, sorry about that. Jeez.
What?
Take it right from the top?
Yeah. You don't. Okay. We'll take it from the top.
All righty. Sorry.
Thank you. Well, hello, I'm Janet Morena, Executive Director of Priests for Life. Welcome to Just Ask Janet. Well, you know, brothers and sisters, there are still thousands and thousands of babies who die every single day in our country from abortion. And did you ever think what happens to those babies' bodies? Where do they go? Sadly, for the most part, they end up being disposed as medical waste. But fortunately, over the decades, some of those babies were able to be retrieved and given a proper, respectful burial. Well, joining me today on this program is a great pro-life leader. And of course, he's the son of Joe Scheidler, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And so welcome to the program, Eric Scheidler, who of course is heading up the Pro-Life Action League. Welcome, Eric.
Great to be with you, Janet.
Well, I cannot have a program, you on a program without talking about your father, Joe Scheidler, who recently passed away this year in January. And, you know, the influence that your dad has had on so many people in the pro-life movement, but people who are in leadership. I can remember in 1993, when Father Pavone was first given the mantle by Cardinal O'Connor to head up Priests for Life, your dad was the very first trip he made out to Chicago. And your dad kind of took him under his wings, introduced him to a whole bunch of pro-life leaders. And the influence, you know, Father Pavone and I read your dad's book, Close 99 Ways to Stop Abortion. We read that when he was my parish priest. And so when I finally met your dad, you know, in Washington, and now I got another copy of that book, and he actually autographed it for me. It was like I met the superstar of the world. And I can't tell you how many times I was at pro-life events with your dad. I've ridden taxis with him to and from places. And there is not a pro-life leader around, past or present, that I admired more than your father. And the influence he made on me personally and Father Pavone to realize taking the message to the streets is what we had to do if we were going to bring an end to abortion. So tell us a little bit about your memories with your dad. I mean, you basically cut your teeth on the pro-life movement, didn't you?
Well, you know, my dad was one of the very first to realize that the pro-life movement would never succeed in transforming our culture and restoring legal protection to unborn children until regular Americans got deeply invested in this cause. It would never be enough to launch big educational campaigns or do full-page ads in the newspaper or lobby legislators, appeal to the media to tell the truth. That would never be enough, that regular people needed to get involved. And from his activism, from his recognition of this need to mobilize the grassroots of Christian faithful and Jewish faithful and atheist faithful, who at least are faithful to life, was a tremendous insight. And it gave birth to so many different branches of the movement. I mean, I think 40 Days for Life is a direct outgrowth of this kind of outreach, Sidewalk Advocates for Life. Of course, the League was able to have a tremendous influence, my father, on Priests for Life, on Operation Rescue, on Americans United for Life. So all these different organizations have, you know, sort of grown and evolved from that initial insight that regular Americans need to take sort of ownership, as we put it now. They need to own this battle to defend the lives of unborn children. And so I grew up inside this movement. Some of my earliest memories are of pro-life events. I attended my first pro-life rally when I was 6 years old in 1972. It was actually September 30th. So we're about to celebrate the anniversary of that first event. It was 1972, when my parents took me and my two little brothers to a rally at the Civic Center with State Representative Henry Hyde, who would go on. He was the keynote speaker. He would go on to become Congressman Henry Hyde, the author of the Hyde Amendment, you know, an incredibly important statesman in this history of the battle to end abortion. And that's really where it all started. My father was handed a copy of that Life and Death flyer that Dr. Jack Wilkie and his team put out, you know, way back in the 60s. And one of the images on that flyer of a dumpster full of aborted baby corpses from Canada struck him very personally, because one of the babies in that bucket of corpses looked like my baby picture. And I think that for him, that is when abortion went from being this sort of unspeakable injustice to being a personal injustice that he needed to take responsibility for addressing.
Well, and your dad really, I mean, he was a successful businessman. I always refer to him, and many of us do, as the godfather of the pro-life movement, and just what you're saying proves that fact. But your father took his convictions so far as the National Organization for Women then sued him and the Pro-Life Action League, and he went to the Supreme Court not once, not twice, but three times, and your very home was put in jeopardy. I always remember your mom saying this, like, you know, I never know when we're going to lose our house. If we lose this case, there goes the home. And then what? I mean,
Now versus Shidler was the only case in U.S. federal court history to ever go before the court three times. It's also the longest running case in U.S. federal court history. It was originally filed in 85 or 86, and it was not finally disposed until, gosh, it was around like 13 or 14. Because there were so many little rivulets of tributaries from that lawsuit that had to be settled. But the nutshell of it was that he and several other defendants, including the Pro-Life Action League as an organization, were brought up on racketeering charges, a law designed to go after the conspirators who run organized crime operations and who don't actually commit crimes but order others to and conspire and organize the crimes. This law meant to bring down gangsters like Al Capone was used against pro-life activists. Even the Supreme Court's liberal justices like Ruth Bader Ginsburg could see that this would be a very dangerous way for local state laws to be used against pro-life activists if they could be bundled under this RICO statute and cause racketeering cases to be brought against people who are advocating for a social justice cause rather than for some sort of criminal intent. Case finally resulted in his complete exoneration before the Supreme Court and then led to his drafting his memoir, now out by Tan Books, Racketeer for Life, which is an excellent read and really tells the story of his lawsuit, of his beginnings in the pro-life movement, and all the different things that he has done over the years. Father Frank, of course, figures prominently in that book, along with other great leaders like Troy Newman and Chris Slattery, and you're in there, I believe. I mentioned as well. And, so many other greats over the years.
And I want to encourage everybody, Racketeers for Life. I have my autographed copy that I love and cherish. I've read it. I'm sure if you go to Amazon, you can get it. It's mm-hmm. a fabulous read. But, you know, when you think about that Supreme Court victory, Eric, what was it? Was it 7-2, I think? What was it? Was it the victory?
The first time we went to the Supreme Court for Shidler 1, as they call it, back in the early 90s, we lost 9-0 unanimously. What was an issue at that time? Yes. And, you know, a lot of pro-life people, well-meaning though they may be, have sometimes used that ruling to attack people like Justice Scalia, who I consider a great jurist and a champion of the Constitution. Well, the question before the court at that time was, can this RICO statute be used in this way against people who don't have an economic motive? And in fact, the law was badly enough written. Even its author came to the court and said, no, it can't be used this way. And their response was, actually, you didn't write it clearly enough then, because it doesn't say you can't. So they said, go ahead and try, see what happens. So fast forward till 2003, and after the district court trial, which my father lost, the jury trial, and the appellate court level, we lost there. Finally, we go back to the Supreme Court, and we got an 8-1 ruling in favor of Joe Shidler, the Pro-Life Action League, and the other defendants. It was the only dissent in that ruling was Justice John Paul Stevens. And then we had to go back again because the appellate court, the 7th District Court, decided to basically disobey the Supreme Court, and they did not enter a judgment for the defendants. Instead, they decided to try to rig up a couple of other charges. It's a very, very, very complicated case and hard to talk about in a short time. But long story short, we had to go back to the Supreme Court and say, well, did you mean it when you said that the judgment had to be vacated? This time we got an 8-0 unanimous ruling. 8 because Justice Alito had just come on the court and he hadn't been there for all arguments and Justice O'Connor had left. So we got Stevens on our side this time. Not that he agreed with disagreed with his original ruling, but he did agree that, yeah, I wasn't on their side, but this is what the court said. You have to vacate this.
Wow.
So it was a real saga. And yeah, our house had to be put up as bond so that we could actually mount the appeal in the first place of the original district court ruling. So those laws have fortunately changed, and defendants no longer have to risk their, you know, their homes.
Their homes, you know.
It's outrageous that you would demand that people be millionaires in order to, you know, appeal a federal court ruling. And that has changed, thankfully.
But it just shows the great faith that your dad had, and of course your wonderful mother, you know, behind every great man's a woman, and your mom was with your dad through all this, 100%. Mm-hmm. I was at your victory party, I remember that. And I remember your mom telling to me, well, Janet, I can finally remodel my kitchen after all this time.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I was actually, I was kind of heartbroken when she remodeled the kitchen, because I loved that old yellow tile that had been in there since I was a child. She had hated it since the day they moved in. And finally, after this case,
it just shows that you know, your dad always, you know, he didn't just talk the talk, he walked the walk. And of course, you know, the street activism that you continue now of your father with the Face the Truth tours, which I know we at Priest for Life did it when we were up in New York. There's such inspiration of bringing those pictures of what the victims of abortion, what it does to those children, has changed hearts and minds over the decades. But now I know you, along with Priest for Life and Monica Miller, have created, I forget how many years it is. It's been about what? Eight,
we started
nine?
In 13. So I think this is
13,
the age.
Oh my gosh. The National Day of Remembrance of Aborted Children. You know, imagine, I mean, we have all kinds of national days, but now a national day to remember those aborted children, but to actually go to the burial sites where these children are buried. And there are quite a few that I think you keep finding more and more, but about how many burial sites are there all over the United States? Do you know, Eric, roughly?
I believe it's 55, 56.
56,
and,
okay.
And when we started this project, we knew, this is really interesting, we knew about 25 of them. We made a list of all the burials that we knew had taken place over the years. We did a lot of research. We found 25. Over the course of this project, for the first several years, it's been 9 years now that we've been doing it, we were finding new burial places regularly as people reached out to us and told us about them. Another thing that's happened is, of course, there have been several burials during this time period. Perhaps the most famous of which is the burial last year, right before COVID and all the lockdowns, of the 2,411 abortion victims of notorious abortionist Ulrich Klopfer, who died in 2020, and then, 2019, and then had... as his family was going through his effects, they found all these boxes where he'd been storing these corpses of fetuses that he'd aborted. And they found some in his house. They found some in a car that he'd been renting. And those babies were finally delivered back to Indiana, where they'd come from, where they'd been aborted, and then finally buried at a cemetery in South Bend, where Ulrich Klopfer's, one of his abortion facilities was. So we now have a regular memorial service taking place at this very important burial site. There's another burial that's taking place about a week and a half after the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children this year. And it will be then added to our list and added to our regular schedule. So it's a grim thing to bury these children. It's an incredibly difficult thing to have to behold their mangled bodies in the Worldpacks, you know, and all of the, you know, to just contemplate the horror of their end. And to be at the grave sites of these children and contemplate, you know, you see the date on the gravestone, and, you know, I'll be at the memorial service at Queen of Heaven Cemetery in Hillside, Illinois. There's 2,033 corpses beneath our feet, you know, still preserved in their formaldehyde packs. And you think 1987, 88, these babies were buried. They would be in their early 30s now, these kids. Some of them would be parents. Some of them might even be grandparents. And you think of the generations that were cut off. We don't know their names. We don't know which was a boy, which was a girl, because they were just torn to shreds. We can't tell. We don't know anything about them except for this, that they were children of God, that he loved them. And as Cardinal George put it at our very first memorial service, because he loved them, we love them too.
That's right. That's right. And I think one of the largest sites, Eric, isn't it out in Los Angeles, where it's, I think, over 10,000 babies are in one burial site?
That's right. Oddfellows Cemetery. Where there's over 10,000 corpses that are buried in a public cemetery, which is really interesting. In fact, the story of the Oddfellows burial, of the Queen of Heaven burial, and many of these other burials are recounted. Those stories are told at our website, nationaldayofremembrance.org. At nationaldayofremembrance.org, you can visit the list of locations, and you can read some of the history of many of those burial sites and how they came to be, how the babies came to be discovered, how they came to be buried, and who's been involved with the sort of memorializing of these children over the years.
Yeah. I know Father Frank and I have been involved in several of burials of these children. We've done actually two burials are out at Hansville, Mother Angelica's shrine. There's two out there. They were actually done two separate occasions. The most recent one, Monica Miller retrieved those babies outside a dumpster in, I believe, Michigan. And those children were buried out there. And we actually did a whole, EWTN did a whole televised of the burial to draw attention to the fact that look at these children that are just, I mean, most of these babies end up as medical waste, as you know, in the garbage, basically. Yeah. And these are the ones fortunate enough to at least have a proper burial. Now, I know up on the website, too, Eric, there's suggestions, aren't there, for like prayers or that people can, you can actually see on September 18th is the day this year that this is going to occur. And if you just go to your nationaldayofremembrance.org, you can see where the services will be held. So I really recommend for everybody, if there's a service anywhere within a reasonable driving distance to you, I highly recommend you going to the service. And I can tell you, Eric, that with the women from Silent No More who have had abortions and deeply regretted and gone through healing, many of them do come to these services and they find it very healing to be at this site because so many of them don't know what happened to their baby. And so at least if they can come to these sites, they feel like they're being put in touch with at least something similar and they can grieve their child there, you know?
You know, it's interesting, just reflecting on what you're recounting there. You know, in the Beatitudes, our Lord says, blessed are they who mourn for they will be comforted. It's interesting. He doesn't say blessed is he who mourns or she who mourns. He says, blessed are they who mourn. Seems like he's suggesting that mourning is a public activity. And it is, isn't it? I mean, my father, Joe, passed away early in January, as you mentioned, and he was a tremendous hero. And the experience of grieving for him, of missing him, and, you know, also having to continue on his work, you know, here I am grieving my father, and I'm also putting together a newsletter all about him for our donors and benefactors and friends. That's something I could not do alone. It's something you do together with others. It's been an experience that has brought my siblings and I much closer together than we would have ever even thought possible. You know, his death is an incredibly uniting thing. And the sad thing about abortion is that so many women who are regretful of their abortions, and many times it takes years, even decades, for them to reach that point, you know, and overcome the denial that's so much a part of the abortion experience. They suffer alone. They suffer all by themselves. And the National Day of Remembrance is inviting them to mourn publicly. We're giving them a safe space, to use a term of the day, where they can mourn in a public way. And let me share a story about that and how important that is. A couple of years ago at our National Day of Remembrance service at Queen of Heaven in Hillside, Illinois, a woman came up to me after the prayer service with tears in her eyes. And she was very upset. She told me the story of her discovering only a week before that her first grandchild had been aborted. Now, she found this out because she got an insurance bill and she saw that the abortion was on there. And she reached out to her daughter and her daughter had in fact aborted her first, what would have been this woman's first grandchild. And she was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken. Her daughter regretted the abortion already. She was trying to struggle with this grief alone because she didn't want the girl's father, her husband, to know about what his daughter had done. She didn't want him to think ill of her. So she was carrying this all by herself. She came out to the National Day of Remembrance, and she was able to finally weep for her daughter, for her aborted grandchild, for the silence and suffering that she'd been doing by herself. And her tears were not tears of grief. They were tears of gratitude. She was so grateful that we had provided this opportunity for her. And I've seen that play out again and again, women who have had abortions, who have been involved in abortions, men who have paid for abortions, men who regret that, men who desperately wanted the girl not to get the abortion, but she did anyway, women who were forced into it by their parents. So many of these people have come and told their stories and mourned publicly for their children. And it's been a source of tremendous healing and grace. And we're so gratified that it's played out that way, and that we get to play a role in people healing from this horrible scar of abortion.
That's right. And you know what it is? It really shows publicly, like you're saying, that these children, their lives counted. You know, they existed for a short period of time in their mother's womb, and then they didn't, like you said, we didn't know if they were girls or boys or their names, but we have to, at least as a nation, attempt to put humanity back onto them. And we should all be mourning these children. I mean, the blood of these children in America are just running through our streets. Thousands of children are still dying every single day. And so many people, Eric, just walk around like business as usual, and they're not even paying attention. And I think this National Day of Remembrance gives us a chance to pause and stop and mourn the fact that we are still destroying the lives of thousands of children every day in our country.
We desperately need things like this, things that break through that calloused sort of apathy that people have, you know, whether it's showing them those arresting images of the abortion victims themselves, whether it's a public demonstration like we're going to be doing soon in the center of Chicago, counter-protesting a Planned Parenthood rally against the new Texas abortion ban, or whether it's going out to the burial places of aborted children like we're going to do on September 18th for the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children. It's especially significant this year because the Supreme Court is taking up this Dobbs versus Jackson case that very well could mean the end of Roe v. Wade. And when that happens, when our nation finally gets that horrible court precedent out and the states are able to really regulate, restrict, and end abortion the way that's never been possible till now, what we're doing during the National Day of Remembrance, this is a point Father Frank has made very eloquently, what we're doing by mourning these children, visiting their graves, is modeling what the pro-life movement will look like after abortion is illegalized. The sidewalk counseling will end. There won't be abortion facilities for us to sidewalk counsel at. We won't need to do 40 days for life because there won't be any abortion facilities to pray outside of. We won't need to do court battles. We won't need to do the legislation. But we will still have these bodies in the ground and flush down the toilet and you know, put into our water system and incinerated
in
all of it.
Landfills all over. Yeah.
This nation is a burial plot for aborted children. And we'll be modeling what all of us need to be doing, which is to asking for God's forgiveness for this Holocaust and making reparation for the injustice that's been done to these children. So this effort to visit the burial places, this never ends. This goes on forever until the end of time. And so we are preparing the way for that day when we go out there every year to mourn for these children.
That's right. And so, Eric, tell everyone too how they can support the great work of the Pro-Life Action League, okay?
If you visit prolifeaction.org, you can find out all that we're about. You can learn the history of Joe Scheidler and his incredible legacy. You can watch a tribute that we put out for him shortly after he passed away back in January. You can find out the kinds of work we do. We've got a whole take action section that educates you on what you can do in your own community to get involved in the fight against abortion outside abortion facilities or in your town. We have an activism basic training set sort of area that teaches you how to deal with police, how to deal with counter-protesters. We are ready to help. We hold national events every year, like the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children and Christmas caroling and abortion facilities and other things like that. And we work with leaders who are incredibly organized and have a whole staff working with them at a you know, county level pro-life group, all the way down to just, you know, a mom and a pop who are fervent for the cause of life and have gathered their friends and are active at the local abortion facility. So we do it all, and we help with every aspect that we can. You know, my team and I have been working with a group in Rogers, Arkansas, where Planned Parenthood is about to open a new facility, and helping them to strategize. So we are here to serve the grassroots. We are here to put you to work in your town, in your state, in your neighborhood, being a voice for the unborn child, and we're eager to help. So get in touch with us at prolifeaction.org. You can make a gift. You can find out what kind of work we're doing. You can get on our prayer schedule. Get on our email list. We often put out prayer alerts when we go out on the street. We want people to pray for us. And so we need you to be involved with us.
And one curious thing I have to ask, Eric, when you were telling us all the great work you guys are doing, the one thing you said is Christmas caroling at abortion mills. Just tell me quickly about that.
Yeah, I'm a weirdo. I go sing Christmas carols at abortion facilities. This was an idea that sort of Catholic feminist speaker on the theology of the body named Katrina Zeno gave to me over lunch one day. She said, you know, I bet if you sang Christmas carols at abortion facilities during the Christmas season, it would actually help women to remember the abortion at Christmas time as they associate it with those Christmas carols and have them come back to asking forgiveness, that this would be a sort of a seed, planting a seed for them. And I was really struck by that. So for many years now, the Pro-Faction League has been going to abortion facilities in the Chicago area. We do a tour. We actually have two tours. We travel around to various abortion facilities and we sing these Christmas carols and we've saved babies during these tours. In fact, our first year, we were outside of American Women's Medical Center in Chicago, and we decided to move very close to the where we knew the waiting room was and to sing with our full-throated voices. We sang silent. And while we were singing that song, a woman came out of the facility and said, I heard you singing. I thought about Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus, and I couldn't do it. And we got her in touch with a pregnancy center and saved a life that day just by singing a Christmas carol. So we bring these stories of the Christ child, stories filled with hope and light, to these places of despair and darkness. And we remind these moms and dads that a birth can mean hope instead of sorrow and work and difficulty. Yeah. That a child, even in incredibly difficult circumstances, as those faced by Mary and Joseph were, you know, poor immigrants, you know, trying to do their civic duty to the Roman emperor, yeah, and sleeping in a manger, you know, if they could do it, you know, maybe you can too. And it's an important reminder and one that really seems to hit home with people. And it's very popular. Every year we have more and more cities doing it. It's become a really beloved event.
Well, hey, something to look forward to for the Christmas season, right?
That's right.
It's a lot of people don't do Christmas caroling anymore. And this is a Christmas caroling with a purpose. You might be saving a baby's life. So I want to thank you, Eric, for joining me today. Great conversation. And of course, brothers and sisters, I hope you do go to National Day of Remembrance, the website. And please try to get to one of those facilities if you can on September 18th, because you will not regret the experience. You're doing what the Lord asked us. Blessed are those who mourn, and let's mourn together for the thousands of children that die every single day still in our country. So thanks for joining me, Eric.
Said, blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. You will be comforted if you come out to one of these National Day of Remembrance services, I promise.
That's right. Thank you, Eric. Well, brothers and sisters, thank you too for joining me on Just Say Yes, Janet. And remember, by your actions, there are some abortions only you will be able to stop and some lives only you will be able to save. Join us again next time on Just Say Yes, Janet.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.